away. Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spotless, fiery as a mouse. Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 30, Hill and Dale. Saturday, March 15th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode includes the following segments: the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, a little bit of learning, and double happiness. The front porch. I'm still working on Brucey, the sock pattern for round one of Sock Madness. It's a sock knitting competition that has about 8 rounds. I'm hoping to make it into round 2. And to do that, I need to complete 2 socks in the Brucey pattern by Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. So really that means by Monday evening, because I need to go to work in the morning on Tuesday. I have turned the heel on my second sock, and I do have some knitting time set aside for Sunday and Monday. So I think that completing my second Brucey sock is within the realm of possibility. The bad news is that somehow between sock 1 and sock 2, my gauge has changed radically. And sock 1 now seems baggy and loose compared to the dense and springy texture I've accomplished on sock 2. Which makes me think that when this round is over, what I really need to do is re-knit the entire sock 1. There's this thing in knitting called second sock syndrome, which is this whole idea that when you finish the first sock, you don't want to go and do a second sock. I don't know where sock number 3 fits into this whole scenario, but it can't be good. I'm not motivated to knit the second sock a third time, or I don't even know how to describe what that would be. To have 2 competent socks completed. So what I'm taking away from this whole process is that I need to knit 2 socks in tandem. And that's not a problem because I have 2 needles of the same size and I could be doing that. But what it requires is that you wind 2 balls of yarn so that you can start 2 socks at the same time. And that way you can keep the same gauge and you can also keep your pattern consistent. So if you make a small change or alteration on one sock, you don't really need to remember it or write it down because you're immediately going to knit the same section on sock 2. That will be my sock knitting method from now forward. This is only my 7th or 8th pair of socks in the history of my knitting, so I'm not very experienced, and I don't really have a lot of motivation for sock knitting. I think some people see themselves as sock knitters primarily, and everything else is kind of a departure from the sock knitting that they really want to do. I don't see myself that way. I can enjoy knitting socks, and this pattern is a lot of fun because the Brucey sock has some different stitch patterns that imitate water and waves, and the way it's coming out is really cool, especially on sock 2. Every once in a while, I need a break from the sock knitting and using US size 1 needles, and when I need a break, I turn to my spinning wheel. I've just started some new fiber on the spinning wheel, and not only is it new, but this is a new-to-me kind of fiber. I ordered this from Ginny of Fat Cat Knits, and it is 6 ounces of Wensleydale in the London Fog colorway. After receiving the Wensleydale, I started some investigation in my fleece and fiber source book and found out that not only is Wensleydale one of the conservation breeds in the English long wool family, but it is perhaps the only breed that can be traced back to a single ancestor. Wensleydale is about as far from spinning merino as you can get, and I wanted really a departure in fiber and something that was new and interesting. I definitely found that in Wensleydale. The staple length on this fiber is about 6 to 8 inches, which means that you can use a really long draw method. It also means that you can put quite a low amount of twist on the fiber and it holds together nicely because that staple length is so long. Aside from the long staple length, the next pronounced quality of Wensleydale fiber is its luster. The wool almost looks waxy or translucent. There is a halo on the spun fiber, but it's really soft. It looks like it might be wiry or coarse, but it's very, very soft to the touch. I am not sure yet how I will be plying this yarn. The way it's dyed makes me think that doing a chain ply could give it very interesting color variation and keep those colors together. I don't know how well this Wensleydale will look in a chain plied yarn, so I'm not too sure about that. And since I have 6 ounces, it's going to take me quite a while to get through the singles. But I'm really enjoying the spinning of it, and it provides a great departure from the sock knitting. Ever-expanding skill set. I have a tradition of making Irish soda bread in advance of St. Patrick's Day every year. And because this month in the Bulk Bins cook-along, I am putting spices in the spotlight, I thought I would use a recipe featuring caraway seeds. And it also has raisins. So I have written up the recipe that I've been using. And in writing it down, I really was able to refine the different aspects of the recipe. So one of the things, of course, is that I put caraway seeds and golden raisins in my Irish soda bread. Some people enjoy that, some people don't. Since I like to have orange marmalade with my Irish soda bread, I thought I would magnify the intensity of the orange by putting some grated orange rind into the bread as well. And as a nod to the ancestry of soda bread in general, I use just a small amount of whole wheat flour in addition to the all-purpose flour. The recipe also contains buttermilk, which is traditional, and I prefer to use 2 eggs rather than 1 egg. I've written up the recipe and posted it on my website. I will also post the recipe in the March thread for our Bulk Bins cook-along. I invite you to check it out. Let me know if you try the recipe, what you think, and feel free to post not only your own Irish soda bread recipes, but any recipe featuring spices which are in the spotlight this month. Also photographs of your spice rack, spice shelf, or spice storage are welcome in the thread, and each month I select one random winner who will receive the prize of a pattern on Ravelry, and sometimes I have some other alternative choices for prizes as well. So participate on the thread as much as you want for more chances to win a prize. Linda from Delaware posted a recipe for chai tea on the March Bulk Bins cook-along thread, and if you go over there for nothing else, that chai tea recipe is totally worth it. This morning, I enjoyed Irish soda bread and chai tea, which I know is a journey over hill and dale as far as world cuisines are concerned. But that's the way we roll at Yin Hu. We like to mix it up as often as possible. I hope you enjoy the thread and find a way to contribute. A little bit of learning. As I was working on my Irish soda bread recipe and writing everything down this week, I started to grow curious about the history of soda bread. I found a really interesting article on Epicurious. I was dismayed to learn that the Irish soda bread I've been making doesn't really have much in common with Irish soda bread in its most basic, authentic form. Soda bread became popular in the early 1800s. It was all the rage because home cooks could add an ingredient called bread soda, which is our equivalent to baking soda. And this would be a replacement for yeast in yeast breads. And it also meant that the breads were easy to bake without an oven, because in Ireland in the 1800s, not many people had an oven that they could cook in. More likely, they were using some kind of cast iron pot with a lid, and they were placing items inside and shoveling coals over top of them to create a small version of an oven. This bread soda in the bread made bread cook very well using this method. And often, the flour that would be used for a bread like this would be rather coarse. It wouldn't be our fluffy white all-purpose flour. Raisins, which are often included in Irish soda bread in contemporary times, would have been a luxury for the Irish of the early and mid-1800s. So they probably would not have been used. However, throwing in a handful of caraway seeds was pretty typical in some parts of Ireland, so that's likely a tradition that made its way to America when Irish immigrants came over. In the article, there is a caution against kneading the dough for Irish soda bread. Because it's not a yeast dough, working the dough too much can result in a really tough bread. In my recipe, I do recommend kneading the dough with a quick knead, the same as you would do with scones. So you give the ingredients a few quick stirs, and then you dump the whole bowl out onto a counter and use your hands and the heat of your hands to work everything together very quickly. This is not a turn it over and knead several times and keep that going for many minutes kind of need. This is seconds, and probably with floured hands so that your hands don't get stuck in the dough because it can be quite sticky. I like to work with a smaller sized recipe. A lot of the recipes for Irish soda bread will have something like 4 or 5 or 6 cups of flour and will make one very large loaf. I prefer to make smaller loaves, and the recipe that I've developed calls for 2.5 cups of flour total. I feel that this smaller amount of ingredients makes it possible to work the dough very quickly and get it into a loaf shape and on a pan before it becomes overworked and has the potential for being tough. I've linked to the article about Irish soda bread in the show notes on my website, and there are also attached to that article several different varieties of recipes for soda bread, going from a very traditional brown bread style to something with chocolate-covered orange peel or something that's really decadent. Whether you make your own or whether you try someone else's, I hope you have a chance to enjoy some Irish soda bread this St. Patrick's Day. Double happiness. This week I found out that I was a winner. Are you a listener of the U University podcast? If you aren't, you should be. Chris, who is Dr. Kelly, has a really fantastic podcast about the nexus between education and women's issues and the fiber arts. She delivers some really great lectures via audio. that are fascinating and informative. She has a very soothing, calming voice, and she has some really great activity going on her Ravelry board. One of the things she does is she has a valedictorian each month in the graduating class. And the way you become part of the graduating class is that you post your finished projects for that month. Everything in the U University podcast has kind of a collegiate bent to it. So February was pretty productive for me, and I posted a number of projects over there. And Chris let me know that I was the winner of one of her House Yarn knitting bags. So she invited me to go over to her Etsy shop, take a look, and pick one out that I really liked. She had a bag with typewriter fabric. It is so cool. And the lining, paper clips, really fun, really nerdy, and really fun, which is my kind of fun. So I want to thank Chris not only for the gift of the bag, but also for her support of the Yarns at Yinhu podcast and her enthusiasm. She also, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, started a project that introduced people to new pen pals. That's the way I met my pen pal, Fernanda. We've been corresponding, and having a pen pal as an adult has been one of the most rewarding experiences I've had over the past couple of years. It's just a lot of fun to think about your life and to slow down and do some writing and talk about the things that really matter instead of all of the trivial things that sometimes fill our days. I was searching around on Goodreads for a quote for this week, and I found a passage from a book called Urban Shaman, which is not a book I've read. It's by C.E. Murphy. But some of the reviews on Goodreads say that it's very good, they're very complimentary, and that what the author C.E. Murphy does is she fuses Celtic and Native American traditions in this novel. So I thought I'd read a small passage which is very fitting for St. Patrick's Day. In Ireland, you go to someone's house and she asks you if you want a cup of tea. You say, no, thank you, you're really just fine. She asks if you're sure. You say, of course you're sure, really, you don't need a thing, except they pronounce it ting. You don't need a ting. Well, she says then, I was going to get myself some anyway, so it would be no trouble. Ah, you say, well, if you were going to get yourself some, I wouldn't mind a spot of tea at that, so long as it's no trouble and I can give you a hand in the kitchen. Then you go through the whole thing all over again until you both end up in the kitchen drinking tea and chatting. In America, someone asks if you want a cup of tea and you say no, and then you don't get any damn tea. I liked the Irish way better. C.E. Murphy from her novel Urban Shaman.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider liking the show's Facebook page or leaving a rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.